Our view is that Senator Murkowski could do two things. She could abandon her pursuit of this legislation, or she could give back all of the money received from special interests tied to this legislation.
Reaction to Senator Murkowski's proposal to restrict EPA powers. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 20th of January. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, lawmakers prepare to hear from Governor Parnell in tonight's State of the State address.
The tax credits that have been described only come into effect if you're drilling wells.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. When you file your PFD online, your donation through Pick, Click, and Give can make a huge difference in the lives of Alaskans. Your contribution can lend a hand to Alaskans worried about their next meal or help children who suffer abuse and neglect. Your generosity can help provide shelter for a homeless Alaskan whose average age is just 9 years old. Go to pickclickgive.org and select your favorite cause and be the person who sets it all in motion. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Governor Parnell will make his first State of the State speech tonight to a joint session of the House and Senate, where he will show the direction he wants to take the state in the coming year. Jerry Gallagher, his legislative liaison and communications director, says a simple look at the focus of the legislation the governor has introduced so far and those he will continue to introduce over the next few weeks shows the administration's focus on jobs and the needs of Alaska's families.
You look at his budget and you look at his activity that he's asking the agencies to emphasize, and you will see the area of jobs and economy woven throughout those. That is the common theme that you can hear the governor talking about, and his actions are going to focus on those, and the emphasis is going to focus on those.
As examples, Gallagher points to the governor's budget that spends money on state buildings that need repairs. The governor sees that work as jobs for Alaska craftsmen. He also mentions the domestic violence package of legislation, the merit scholarship plan for Alaska high school graduates, increased relief in state disasters, and oil taxes.
Even the tax proposal that the governor talked about the other day to make some changes to ACEs, the significant part of that is the tax credits that have been described only come into effect if you're drilling wells. So that results in more jobs and more oil production in the pipeline.
In recent years, Democrats have been the swing votes that have decided issues between factions within the House Republicans. And while not in line with the governor, Democrats' hopes for the session are not too far removed from his. Fairbanks' David Guttenberg says the House minority supports job growth and the return of economic benefits to Alaskans.
We have all the resources that you would ever want. We need to be developing them well for Alaskans. Jobs, educational opportunities from low tech to PhD programs. We have the ability to be self-sustaining in so many ways that we're the envy of many places. We've got the tools, we just need to put them in place.
For example, Democrats want to see a scholarship program that is not only merit-based like the governor's, they also want to include more opportunity for those who would qualify for a scholarship based on need. Oil tax incentives could get their support if they see a benefit to Alaskans. Anchorage Democrat Mike Dugan says the Democrats will support anyone who supports their priorities, be it the governor or a member of the majority. The speech can be heard on many of these APRN stations beginning at 7 this evening. Senator Lisa Murkowski is pushing forward with her controversial move to challenge the authority of the Environmental Protection Agency. In a speech on the Senate floor tomorrow, Murkowski plans to announce exactly what method she'll use to fight the EPA's finding that greenhouse gases endanger public health. The endangerment finding allows the EPA to restrict emissions under the Clean Air Act. But Murkowski says stationary sources, such as power plants and factories, should not be included. The senator can either introduce an amendment that would strip the EPA of its powers, or she can offer up a resolution of disapproval. That's a seldom used tactic that could overturn the EPA's endangerment finding. Murkowski said today that she's leaning toward using the resolution.
At this point in time, my inclination is to proceed with the resolution of disapproval. I think that that is a more clear path forward.
Murkowski's resolution would have to pass both the Senate and House to have any impact. She says no matter what approach she takes, her goal is the same.
Either way, I think it's important that we demonstrate repeatedly that the preferred alternative when it comes to regulating emissions in this country is to move through a legislative procedure, a legislative route that will allow for a balancing of how we truly reduce our emissions in this country, while at the same time ensuring that we don't kick the economy in the head and further wound it.
Environmentalists and watchdog groups have slammed Murkowski for her plans. In Anchorage today, the National Wildlife Federation joined with commercial fishermen, nonpartisan public interest advocates, and even Republican conservationists in calling a halt to the senator's proposal. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Only a few people crowded into a local coffee shop to hear the National Wildlife Federation's Pat Lavin.
I think everyone knows why we're here. Senator Murkowski is proposing to prevent the Environmental Protection Agency from regulating carbon pollution. This is supported by coal companies and others that don't want to address climate change.
The NWF has contacted Senator Murkowski on behalf of its 4 million members, asking her to scuttle the proposed amendment while releasing a television ad criticizing Murkowski's action as an attack on the Clean Air Act. Lavin says Murkowski's legislation could hurt Alaska's economy while weakening Environmental Protection Agency efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
It's also about whether Alaska's natural gas will enjoy an expanding market, about whether our villages will be falling into the ocean or successfully have the impacts of climate change mitigated. This is 100 and some resolutions from Alaska Native villages that have called for action from Senator Murkowski and from Congress on climate change. It's about that. And it's one time where those of us in Alaska who care about the environment and those who are interested in developing Alaska's resources should be standing hand in hand.
Matt Wallace, executive director of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, said Alaska is on the front lines of climate change. Wallace, however, skewered Murkowski on another level.
You know, those that write the big checks tend to get a good return on their investment. And sometimes they even get to write their own laws. That is the troubling appearance of the situation here for Senator Murkowski and the big money lobbyists who helped draft and promote energy legislation on her behalf. And it just so happens that clients for those very same lobbyists have given a whole lot of money to the senator's election efforts over the last few years.
Wallace referred to news reports that Jeff Homestead, a lobbyist for energy interests, helped craft the Murkowski Amendment. Wallace said clients of the lobbyist and electric utilities are major contributors to Murkowski's campaign chest. Wallace called on Murkowski to drop the legislation or to return the campaign contributions she has gained from energy representatives.
And really, we think that in an ideal world, she'd do both.
Lavin says the language of the amendment has not yet been made public, but he says reports are that it would prevent the EPA from regulating carbon pollution. The EPA is working on pollution regulations affecting large producers of greenhouse gases in line with a 2007 U.S. Supreme Court decision regarding the effects of pollution on public health. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, another vote on alcohol in Bethel.
A protest to a liquor license has a major effect on whether or not the ABC board grants licenses.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Today, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced the agency is extending the comment period on its proposal to declare Cook Inlet critical habitat for the region's beluga whales. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Today, yesterday's advanced private conversations became officially published. Sheila McLean, NOAA Fisheries spokesperson, repeated the announcement the mayors of Anchorage, the Kenai Peninsula, and Matanuska-Susitna boroughs had hoped for when they joined forces last month.
We have extended the public comment period on the proposal designating critical habitat for the endangered Cook Inlet beluga whales until March 3rd this year. The additional 30 days should allow sufficient time for responders to comment while still allowing us time to meet the deadline for preparing the final rule.
The three mayors met in late December in response to the announcement that NOAA was proposing slightly more than 3,000 square miles, mostly in Cook Inlet, as critical habitat for the region's namesake beluga whales. They voiced concerns that the designation would impact a range of proposed projects and negatively affect their local economies. The original comment deadline was February 1st. The mayors argued that was not enough time to respond. Alaska's congressional delegation also requested an extended comment period. Anchorage's Mayor Dan Sullivan, Kenai Peninsula's Dave Carey, and Mat-Su's Tals Kolberg also wanted at least one regionally based public hearing on the proposed designation. They got that wish and more.
We are holding public hearings on the proposed critical habitat for Cook Inlet beluga whales in Soldotna, Homer, Wasilla, and Anchorage.
We were very pleased with the 30 days.
Mayor Carey says the Kenai Peninsula had requested 60 days, but a 30-day extension is fine. He also added a footnote to the two selected Kenai Peninsula locations.
We have also asked that we'd like to see a public hearing in Tyonek. The individuals in Tyonek have strongly asked that they be included in a public hearing.
The Soldotna hearing is set for February 2nd with Homer the day after. That's not much time, but Carey says the borough is ready.
A component of this is the right to ask that a particular area be granted a waiver from the designation. And in doing that, there is a balance that they will look at. It's part of their own rules that you balance the economic disadvantage or the economic damage of an area being included as compared to its effect on critical habitat specifically for that area.
Wasilla is scheduled for February 11th and Anchorage on the 12th. Mayor Sullivan says the city has hired a special advisor, William Sell. Sell worked for a federal agency dealing with endangered species before joining the legal firm K&L Gates of Seattle. He'll help coordinate the municipality's response.
Several of our departments, the port and the Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utility, have been monitoring and studying and preparing for this issue for quite a while, because when you're working in Cook Inlet and the belugas having been designated a couple of years ago as an endangered species, they've been proactive. They've got good technical and legal staff who have been studying the issue and preparing a potential response. And so we want to make sure that we advocate for commerce continuing in the municipality, but at the same time, we want to maintain good relationships with our federal regulatory agencies.
Both mayors say they're seeking a balanced solution, one that science says will protect a designated endangered specific species of beluga whose population remains in trouble, as well as perhaps portions of its habitat. At the same time, the borough and municipal leadership wants to do as much as possible to protect the economic health of the state's most populous area. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Bethel residents voted against every type of alcohol sales in a special election held yesterday. The vote was only advisory and does not change Bethel's alcohol status, but it could bolster the city's position as they try to persuade the state's governing body to deny liquor license applications. Shane Iverson from member station KYUK in Bethel has more.
Bethel is still an unrestricted community, like Anchorage or Juneau. There's no laws limiting importation, and businesses are still free to apply to sell alcohol. But the vote was still important, says Vice Mayor Eric Middlebrook.
There's no laws or resolutions that are going to come as a result of this vote. However,
myself, and I get the indication from all the other council members that they will follow whichever way this vote falls.
That means the Bethel City Council will likely protest every single liquor license application that goes before the state's Alcohol Beverage Control Board. That's the body that grants or denies liquor licenses in Alaska. Again, Vice Mayor Eric Middlebrook.
A protest to a liquor license has a major effect on whether or not the ABC board grants licenses.
The special election was called by the City Council after Bethel voters threw out 30 years of local option in the October election. Those results were unclear. 54% of Bethel voters said yes, the city should stop the prohibition of alcohol sales. But Middlebrook and many others said the majority voted not to end prohibition outright, but rather they wanted to end the state of Alaska's regulation of prohibition. The results of this vote seem to validate that interpretation. 73% of Bethel voters do not want alcohol sales in bars. 63% do not want sales in restaurants or package stores. The only type of sales that was not overwhelmingly rejected was a city-run alcohol store. But even that was opposed by 58.5% of Bethel voters. Already there are 10 Bethel businesses applying for a liquor license. That includes 7 restaurants, 2 package stores, and 1 club. The Alcohol Beverage Control Board will meet in February to approve or deny some of those applications. Reporting from Bethel, I'm Shane Iverson.
Alaska senators say it's too early to tell what impact yesterday's Republican Senate seat victory in Massachusetts will have, but Democrats are scrambling to regroup after the loss. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Republican Scott Brown's win in Massachusetts turns a seat that was a Democratic lockup red. Senator Ted Kennedy held it for 40 years until his death last summer from cancer. The change of that one seat in the Senate cost Democrats their powerful 60-vote block. That means an uncertain fate for their health care bill and the party's other agenda items. But Alaska's Democratic Senator Mark Begich played down the loss Wednesday.
I came here when we didn't have 60, so it's kind of nothing new to me. And it also, it gives us a chance to convince another person, because a lot of the East Coast Democrats and Republicans have not been supportive necessarily of Alaska issues. So this gives me a chance to maybe get a fresh face that can look at what's important to Alaska.
Begich says no one yet knows what the Republican win means for health care legislation. Marrying the bills that passed the House and Senate last year will now be even more difficult. However, Begich says he doesn't think this destroys the work done by Senate Democrats to pass a bill.
I wouldn't use the word kill. I'd say all the work in health care has come from one element to where we are today. Does that mean the stuff in the early days was killed or wasted? No. Everything's a base point of something to work from. Or, and some people might not want to work at all on it. But I'm hoping, what I heard from the Republicans was, people want insurance reform. They want health care reform. Okay. There's no excuse now for participation.
Alaska's Democrat says he's not taking Brown's win in Massachusetts as a sign that the public is already weary of President Obama and his party. But Begich admits Americans are expressing concern about the administration's priorities. He says the economy is a major factor in public mood, and one that will take more than a year to turn around.
I think the American people realize we have a lot of stuff on the platter, and that there is a worry. I mean, I don't care if you're a U.S. senator or someone working at a clerk in a store, or you're a person at home taking care of your kids, whatever it might be, you're concerned about the economy. It's fragile, and it still is fragile. But I do think that some of the things we've laid out are starting to take hold.
Republicans in Congress are celebrating this week's turn of events. The Senate's top Republican, Mitch McConnell, told reporters that he hopes this means current health care legislation is dead. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski says she considers it to be on hold.
I think for the immediate moment, we know that we're not going to be moving forward on health care until Senator-elect Brown is seated. So what that does to the guys in the back room that have been working to try to find some kind of accommodation between the Democrats, I'm not sure.
Murkowski says she does hope the shift in winds brings health care back to the drawing board. That would erase months of Democratic negotiations. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Communication Systems. Whether your business operations are in Alaska, nationally or internationally, ACS has the network solution to keep you and your business connected. ACSAlaska.com. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Environmentalists and Alaska Native groups have filed a lawsuit to stop Shell Oil from drilling in the Chukchi Sea. The suit filed late yesterday in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals says the Federal Minerals Management Service plan allowing Shell to drill this summer does not meet with environmental laws. Attorneys for Earth Justice filed the lawsuit on behalf of groups including the Native Village of Point Hope, the Alaska Wilderness League, and conservation organization Oceana. Oceana's Pacific Council Michael Levine says they fear an oil spill would have devastating effects on the wildlife and culture of the Arctic.
The Chukchi Sea is one of the most biologically productive areas in the world, and we just don't know a lot about potential impacts to those specific areas, particularly given how fast the Chukchi Sea and the Arctic Ocean in general are changing, without a real baseline of information to understand potential impacts, we shouldn't be drilling.
Shell plans to bring one rig into the Beaufort and share it with the Chukchi projects rather than bringing in multiple rigs. Shell Alaska spokesman Curtis Smith says the company is moving forward and putting the blueprints in place for drilling this summer.
It's our belief the MMS was thorough in its technical and environmental evaluation of our 2010 exploration plan for the Chukchi, and that Shell has demonstrated its ability to operate in the Arctic in an environmentally responsible manner. A tremendous amount of work went into writing and evaluating this permit, and we fully expect the MMS to be successful in defending its approval.
The conservation groups and the Village of Point Hope also filed a similar suit last month over Shell's plans to drill in the Beaufort Sea. Fort Wainwright-based soldiers are getting their Stryker vehicles back. The eight-wheeled armored trucks used during the brigade's year-long deployment to Iraq that wrapped up last fall have begun coming back to Fairbanks. Fort Wainwright spokesman Captain David Maddox says Strykers are initially shipped to Fort Lewis, Washington for post-deployment service.
All the major systems of the Stryker vehicles are refit and reset, and if there's any upgrades that happen during the deployment, those upgrades are installed prior to giving them back here at Fort Wainwright.
Maddox says after being serviced, the Strykers are moved north in two legs.
They're being shipped by boat up to Anchorage Port and then trucked, line-hauled from Anchorage up to here, flatbed them up here. And they're going to be shipped up here in different segments every month up until they get to 300 around March.
Maddox says the first 30 Stryker vehicles were received at Fort Wainwright yesterday. The Homer Animal Shelter is bursting at the seams this time of year. Adoptions, however, are way below normal, and no one seems to know why. From member station KBBI in Homer, Aaron Selbig reports.
The first thing you notice when you walk through the front door of the Homer Animal Shelter is a big glass box filled with cute, fluffy kittens. The kittens were left anonymously a few weeks ago at the shelter's doorstep in a cardboard box. Further inside are more cats, adult cats. Some peer from behind metal cages, while others have earned the right to roam freely. Shelter volunteer Brian Smith says winter is always the busiest time of year.
Yes, Christmas and middle of winter are definitely busy times.
It's cold. The cats and the dogs come in. There's somebody else with a cat or a dog. Probably a cat. They come in in boxes and bags and carriers and kennels, and we get a big influx in the fall and winter.
Shelter director Sherry Best says the problem is the same at animal shelters across Alaska. Too many animals means some of them will have to go.
We are very full. We do the very best we can here, but at some point, the animals have to leave here. I always have to have room to bring another cat in, We have to have room to bring another dog in, and when that doesn't happen and we're this full, then we're looking at animals to make a trip to the vet for euthanasia.
Bess and Smith are quite obviously animal people. You know, the kind that talk to dogs like they're people. Bess takes me back out to the lobby where Smith has released a pair of 10-week-old black Labrador puppies for a little playtime. The puppies look healthy, with shiny coats and boundless puppy energy.
They love people and they love playing and they love attention. Hi! Oh, I know. Good morning. Hi there. Hi. Hi, guys. Hi. There, now they want to play.
Even with the cute little kittens and beautiful dogs like the twin Labs, there haven't been many adoptions lately.
It has been slow, very slow for some weeks now, for a number of weeks now, in what should be a fairly busy time of year. I don't understand that.
We've adopted out how many adult cats in
Three.
The last 2 weeks? Three adult cats
last,
have gone out of here
last,
by being adopted in the last 3 to 4 weeks. That's way below normal. I don't know if it's the economy. I don't know if it's the weather. I don't know what it is, but people are not coming in to adopt.
Outside in a dozen or so fenced-in cages are the rest of the dogs. All kinds of dogs. Big ones, small ones, jumpy ones, and placid ones. One husky with crystal blue eyes stares at me with a mournful look. I take a chance and put my hand up to the fence. Sure enough, he gently licks my fingers, and I want to take him home.
Come and look and see who we have, because we have the most incredible cats and dogs that come into the shelter.
Come meet some of these dogs and cats. They're just amazing. We have amazing animals. They're all unique and special and wonderful and beautiful and adoptable.
Bess and Smith do what they can to keep the shelter's numbers under control. Right now, however, they have their hands full. They enjoy being around the animals and obviously have fun doing their jobs, but still, there's the ever-present thought that too many animals means that some of them will have to go. Smith makes his final plea.
Just come on down. Come on down and take a couple of cats and a dog or two and a rabbit, a ferret, bird, and go home. Please.
In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer and Len Anderson in Anchorage, Shane Iverson in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Aaron Selbig in Homer. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.